And I'd like to introduce our speaker. Many of you already know him, an amazing speaker with a great message of hope, all the way from Boston, Massachusetts, Dave P.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Perry. I'm an alcoholic. Hey. Thanks for having me back. I love coming out here to Quakertown. My friend said, where are we? thanks for having me back. It's been 4 or 5 years I've come out here. I love coming to this meeting. I just absolutely love it. So thank you all my friends who invited me. And Jamie and Mike who drove down with me, wherever they are. I can't see them. Love those guys. Ooh. My sobriety date is November 15, 2001, guys. November 15th, then 6 or 7 weeks, I guess. God willing, I'll have 10 years. And it's an absolutely amazing and unbelievable thing even to be able to say that. November 15, 2001, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous. On November 15, 2001, I say I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous because I'd been here before. No, prior to November 15, 2001, I will be in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 12 years. I didn't know what you people had. More often than not, when I was here, I didn't want what you people had. You know, I'd be coming to meetings on a nightly basis. I'm watching all you people. I'm watching these miracles happen in your lives when they weren't happening in mine. I was a chronic relapser. I couldn't stay sober. More often than not, I was here. I didn't want to be sober. You know, I'm here because my boss has me here. My family has me here. My friends have me here. The courts have me here. Some force in my life has me here, and I don't want to be here. You know? I'm watching this thing work for all you, and it ain't working for me, and I'm getting miserable, and, you know, it's just a matter of time, you know. I know how to quit drinking. God knows, I did that 1,000 times, you know. Can you guys show me how to stay quit? Can you guys show me how to not start again? Or better yet, can you guys show me how to stay quit and stay comfortable doing it? Because that's really what I had to learn. I didn't know how to do that, you know. I was a chronic relapser. You know, I know sobriety. I know how to get sober. My sponsor this time around said, Dave, I could tie you to a tree, you'll get sober. Want me to show you how to recover from this thing? Want me to show you how to get sober and stay comfortable doing it? Let me show you that. You know, that's what changed it all. You know, that was what my sobriety was like for those 12 years, guys. I'm in and out of here. I am in and out, and I know I'm not staying. Every stretch of sobriety I had, whether it was a week, whether it was a month, whether it was a year, at one point 3 years, every stretch of sobriety I had was always marked by one commonality. I was miserable. I was miserable here. I felt like I was sentenced to sobriety. I felt like I was seriously sentenced to Alcoholics Anonymous is what it felt like. Coming to your meetings, I felt like I was. I'm looking around on a nightly basis. My God, please tell me there's more to my life than this. If all I have to look forward to is hot coffee on cold metal chairs hiding out in church basements the rest of my life, shoot me now. I'm not going to make it. And I didn't. I wasn't making it. You know, I'm watching all these miracles happen, this new freedom, this new happiness, these promises you read to me every night. I'm like, when is that going to happen for me? What do you guys, I was going to be amazed before I was halfway through. I'm going, halfway through what? Lunch? My day? What were you talking about, you know? It wasn't happening. You guys are coming every night, not drinking, on purpose. I couldn't get it, you know? But here I stand to you tonight, nine and a half, almost 10 years sober. Almost 10 years away from my last drink. Almost 10 years away from my last drink and drug. And I'm here to report to you, and I didn't drive all the way out here from Boston to lie to you guys. I mean, seriously, I will tell you the truth. I'm here to report that for the better part of these last 10 years, I've been happily, joyfully sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. Happy and sober in the same sentence. Go figure. Huh? Go figure. Happy and sober in the same sentence. And not only that, I've been set free. That's the biggest miracle. Huh, happy and sober. How is it? Why is it? What is it that I can come out here and tell you that for the last 10 years, for the better part of them, I've been happily, joyfully sober, as opposed to those first 12 years, in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out, miserably relapsing, destroying everything good in my life, burning my life to the ground twice over and destroying everything good in it. Why is it so different this time around? It comes down to one thing every time I speak, guys, one thing and one thing only, and I'm going to tell you what it is. It comes down to one word for me. Sponsorship. Sponsorship. This time I got a sponsor. This time I got a guy that was put in my life. God gave me a sponsor. God inspired, God directed, God driven, God inspired, God centered, God conscious through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. A guy who wasn't afraid to tell me the truth. A guy who wasn't afraid to look me in the eye and tell me exactly what he was going to say. And didn't worry about my thoughts and my feelings when he did so. He told me from the start, I don't care what you think, I don't care what you feel, those are not my concerns. I'd rather step on your toes before I stand on your grave. I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you the truth, Dave. My job is real simple, he said. He says, my job is simple. I'm going to take your hand. I'm going to hold on to your hand. I'm going to ask you to trust me. And then I'm going to walk you down a path. I'm going to walk you down a path. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you down a pathway to power. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take your hand. I'm going to put your hand in the hand of a power greater than yourself. And then you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to step aside. I'm not the kind of sponsor who's going to stand around and play God. I'm not the kind of sponsor who's going to tell you how to run your life. I'm not the kind of sponsor who's going to tell you what meetings to go to or not to go to. I'm not the kind of sponsor who's going to tell you who to date and not to date, where to sit and not to sit. You know, I'm not going to not the kind of sponsor who's going to want you to call him every night. As a matter of fact, I'd rather you don't. He goes, my job is simple. I'm going to get you to God. And I'm going to get you to God fast. You got to get God reliant. You got to get God inspired. You got to get God centered. You got to get God conscious. I'm going to show you how to do it. I'm going to show you how to do it right through these simple directions called the 12 steps. He told me Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is nothing I'd ever heard before. Nothing I'd ever heard before what this guy was telling me. He made it so simple. The power in these steps, the power in this program, guys, is really in the simplicity. He told me. He said, David, Alcoholics Anonymous is really nothing but the message delivery business. We're just in the message delivery business. All we are messages here. Yeah. This is the making it available business, the carrying the message business, the showing up business. All my job was tonight is show up. Just show up. Carry this message. Not my message. Not my sponsor's message. This message. This one right here. Show up and carry this message. We're nothing but paper boys and paper girls for God. He writes it. We deliver it. And he goes, and I know what you're going to do, Dave, because I know how you are. You see, once you get this message, and by the way, Dave, if you want recovery, and I'm not talking sobriety, believe me, guys, this book and this whole program works a hell of a lot better when you're sober, you know. But I'm not talking about sobriety when I'm talking recovery. He said, if you want recovery, carrying this message is not an option. It's an absolute requirement. This is not a program for lazy people. Let's just get it out there right now. This is not a program for lazy people, and it's not a program for the people who need it. Needing to see means absolutely nothing. This is a program for the people who want it. Not for the people. God knows I needed what you had for 12 years. God knows I'm burning my life to the ground, destroying everything good in it for 12 years straight. God knows I'm losing cars, careers, homes, relationships, my family's in tears and crumbles, and my life is a shambles. I'm destroying everything good. God knows I needed what you people had. But until unless I wanted what you had, everything I was hearing wasn't going to mean a thing. I heard a guy say it in Boston one time. Couldn't have made it any simpler. He said, hey, guys, if you don't want what we got, don't worry. You ain't going to get it. Relax, kick back, have some coffee, you know what I mean? But if you're looking for this thing called recovery, don't worry, it ain't going to happen. And that was me for 12 years. I thought it would just rub off on me. I'm going to sit next to the happy, shiny people, and maybe I'll get some happy, shiny stuff too, you know what I mean? Didn't work that way. Hey, look, I didn't get drunk watching the guy next to me drink. I'm not going to find my recovery watching the guy next to me take action. And that's what I was doing all those years. I'm watching all you guys take all the action. Well, I'm doing absolutely nothing. Oh, I'm coming to your meetings. I'm a meeting maker. Don't get me wrong, but I thought that was the action. I thought that's all I had to do. Just don't drink no matter what. I drink no matter what. That doesn't work for me. Meeting makers make it. Great. That works for you. That's fantastic. But I never had a spiritual awakening as a result of these meetings. I had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. But not as a result of these meetings. Now, that's not to say these meetings aren't important, guys. I'm at them virtually every night. You know? Here's where I come to bring the message. Here's where I come to carry the message. Here's where I come to seek out the new man. Seek out the new man or the new woman or the new person. Seek him out. Not wait for them to come to me because they won't. I got to go find them. We're fishes of men. We're fishes of women. We're fishes of the sick and suffering. We have to find them. That's our job here, to carry this message. And that's what this guy taught me. He showed me that from the very start. And he goes, I know what you're going to do, Dave. You are not. Hear me. Hear me out. Hear me right now, Dave. I am not here to sell you a thing. Just like none of us here, I'm not here to sell you a thing. If you don't want what we got, I understand that. I didn't want it for 12 years. I can't say the right thing to you if you don't want it. If you don't want it, I'm not going to say the right thing to you anyway. You know? My sponsor said, if you're not done, Dave, go get done. But go get done. The book is real clear on that. If you're not done, go get done. This works a hell of a lot better when you're done. You know? And he made that perfectly clear because I know what you're going to do, Dave. You see, what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you down this path. I'm going to show you what these principles are all about. I'm going to show you how to turn them up and then turn them on in your own life. I'm going to get you to God. I'm going to put your hand in His. I'm going to get you God-reliant. And then I'm going to show you the greatest gift that's ever been passed on to me. He gave to me. You know what he did? He showed me how to pass this simple message on to God's other kids. He showed me how to carry this message. And that's what's changed my life. My life did not begin to change till I began to change, and I didn't begin to change till I started taking actions I didn't understand, taking action I didn't agree with, taking action I didn't believe would ever work for me, and took them anyway, and my God, guess what? I got just exactly what it said. And he said, now here's where I want you to hear me right out, Dave. I want you to make sure, don't you get yourself all caught up in the outcome business. You're not in the outcome business. You're not in the keeping score business. You're not in the getting them sober business. You don't get them sober, you don't get them drunk, you're not that powerful. Your job is to show up. Just to show up. I couldn't have heard it any simpler. A guy in Boston said it one time. He goes, I've been sober 20 years, and in my 20 years of sobriety, I've sponsored over 200 men. He said, 200 men with 100% success rate. I go, 100% success rate? You're going to be shitting me. All my guys are drinking. How'd you do that? He goes, no, don't get me wrong. A lot of my guys are drinking. Matter of fact, some of them are dead. But I've been happily, joyfully sober for these 20 years, and I call that 100% success. He showed up. He wasn't keeping score. I'm not that powerful. We don't get him sober. We don't get him drunk. We just show up. That's what's changing my life, you guys. Getting that simple concept down. And look what they wrote. Having had a spiritual awakening is the result. Not something that might happen if we're lucky. It is the result of these steps. We tried. Why they put that word? They didn't have to put tried in there. They could have just said we carried this message. They said we tried because that's all we're supposed to do. Just try. It says nothing about success. It says nothing about outcomes. That's one of the things this guy taught me among so many other things. No one else this sponsor of mine taught me, you know, that really made it put, that really drove it home. You know, he also taught me right here in this book. Right here in this book, it says we suffer from an illness. Which only a spiritual experience will conquer. Only. I guess I got to get me one of them. We do not suffer from an illness which is conquered by knowledge. God knows, 12 years I could recite the same chapter and verse. Had to impress you, don't you know? Had to let you think I knew what I was talking about while I was here, you know what I mean? Chapter and verse, self-knowledge avails me nothing. This is a program. This is an illness which is defeated by one thing and one thing only. Action, action, and more action. The value of action. My recovery is not in my head. It's in my feet and the actions that I'm taking. Jumping in my car at 11 o'clock this morning with two of my friends and driving out here is just part of the actions that we take. You see, because if I want this gift that's been given to me, if I want to hold on to it, if I want to stay spiritually fit, these are the actions that I have to take. And I've learned that over these last 10 years. So I just keep taking them. He said, this is an illness which only, an illness, first of all, an illness. I couldn't grasp that one. I couldn't get that one. How is this possibly an illness? I'm just a guy who likes to drink every night. I'm just a guy who likes, you know, have an occasional blackout now and then, you know. How is this possibly an illness? How could this possibly be classified as an illness? I work hard. I play hard. Come on, get off my back, you know. I couldn't get this illness thing. And if it is an illness, could you please give me a pill? You know? Seriously. If there was a spirituality pill out there, I'd take one. I take two. I know how I am. If one is good, two is great, give me 10. I got to get through the week. You know what I mean? Or better yet, if this is an illness, how about just checking me in the hospital, cut the thing called alcoholism out of me, and let me go home. Let me go home, you know? 7 years ago, guys, I had my gallbladder removed. Haven't thought about it since. Don't hang out with other gallbladder sufferers, you know? Don't seek gallbladderism. Don't have books about gallbladders the ends of me on a daily basis. Don't help others with gallbladder problems. I'm all set. That's the kind of illness I like, you know what I mean? Who wants an illness that requires that we turn our will and our lives over to the care of God? Who wants the kind of illness that requires that we take personal and searching, fearless moral inventories? Who wants the kind of illness that requires that we make direct amends and restitution to the people we harm, that we pray, that we meditate, and oh my God, that we lay our lives down for our brothers and our sisters who are sick and suffering? Who wants that kind of illness? Well, that's the kind of illness we got. Read the hand. That's the cards. Those, if you're a hopeless variety alcoholic, if you're the real alcoholic, if you're the whole and soul alcoholic that book talks about, that Silkworth wrote about, the 100 men wrote about, that's me. That's the illness we got. We got a thing called alcoholism here, guys. Catch it. Catch it. Those of us who can admit we're alcoholic, those of us who can read our hand and no longer weep, those of us who can take these cards and say, okay, here's the hand I'm dealt, now what am I going to do about it? And stop fighting it, stop looking for that easier, softer way. Those of us who can admit we're alcoholic, we get to recover. It's those of us who continue to deny this deal, we're the ones that usually end up dying from it. And unfortunately, in order for this to be a deadly disease, some of us have to die. You know? Because that was me for 12 years. I refused to accept that. I wanted an easier, softer way. We suffer from an illness which only is spiritual experience. Only. I got to find me one of them. I have no idea what one looks like, tastes like, feels like. I have no idea what one is, but I got to get one. So what do? I go to Mass General. I seek out the psychiatrist, psychologist. Did it for 12 years. I'm not going to get an alcohol. I'm not going to get a spiritual experience at Mass General. Bringing my alcoholism to the psychiatrist is like bringing a jellyfish to an orthopedic surgeon. Just ain't a lot of bones to work with in there. You know what I mean? Ain't going to be able to do much for me. And neither was that psychiatrist. I wasn't going to get him. I'm not going to find a spiritual experience at Mass General Hospital. I'll get a psychiatric experience there. I'll get a psychological experience there. Hey, with any luck, I'll get a pharmaceutical one if I can get a script or two written on the way out the door, because that's really the goal for going, you know what I mean? But I'm not going to get a spiritual one there. You know what else that book told me? My sponsor pointed it out early on. He said, David, if you're an alcoholic of the hopeless variety, if you're the real deal, if you're the hopeless variety, whole in the soul, the hopeless variety alcoholic, you only got two choices. Trust me, guys, I looked for a third. For a long time, I looked for a third. That book makes it real clear. Thought I could find an easier, softer way. I couldn't. Why? Because this is the easiest, softer way. You only got two choices. Like Dave, you're at a game show. Here behind door number one, a life based upon spiritual principles. Behind door number two, doom to an alcoholic death. And I'm like, oh my God, what do I do? what do you do with this? Can I phone a friend? Someone out there, help me, please. Give me a hand. You know? I got my mother going, spiritual principles, Dave, choose the principles. And I'm like, just how bad an alcoholic death are we talking about, guys? You know what I mean? Give me a little more info on this, you know? Seriously. And you did it too. How long did you wrestle with it? I wrestled with it for 12 years. I didn't want this. So I got to look at these last 12 years. Those 12 years in and out, those 12 years chronically relapsing. And I got to look at that, this time around, what do I got to change up? What do I got to do different? Well, when I got here back in 1989, when I first walked into the halls of Alcoholics Anonymous, here's what it looked like on the outside. On the outside, I'm 29 years old. I'm practicing law up on the North Shore of Boston in a very prestigious law firm. You know, I'm an associate with that law firm. On the outside, it looks real good. You know, I get the job with the firm. I'm driving a $50,000 sports car. I got the 4-bedroom, 3-story brick townhouse in Medford. I got $800 suits. And I got all the toys and trappings of success all around me. And if you met me in a bar, believe me, you'd hear all about it in 3 minutes. You know what I mean? We'd get that right out to you, you know? But what you also would have seen, had I known it was there, and what you also would have seen, had I even known it existed, was a hole in the soul this wide. But all the drink and all the drugs and all the glorious courtroom victories, and all the shiny sports cars, and all the beautiful townhouses in the world just couldn't seem to fill. I just couldn't fill it, you know? So I had to look at what I came in here. You know, one of the first things I came in here simply and solely in 1989 because I was about to lose my job, you know? And I walked in here with the arrogance and the ignorance of a man who just came in and said to himself, I'm smarter than all you people. I don't need your help. I don't need your guidance. You know, I got this thing on my own. Thank God I finally figured out there's nothing to figure out. It's all been figured out for us. I just needed someone to help me, show me the way down the path. But I didn't come in here thinking that. I came in here thinking I got this thing down. I don't need your help. I don't need your guidance. I don't need your instruction. I don't need your direction. I don't need your sponsorship. Your big book? Oh, two big thanks. I'm not reading. Look at it. It's huge. I'm not reading this thing. You know? I didn't need any of that. Thank God I was finally, one guy pulled me aside one night in Boston during those 12 years. He looks at me and goes, "Hey, Dave, can I ask you a question?" He goes, "Do you get a sponsor?" I go, "No." "Why do you ask?" "It's that obvious." I guess, you know. He goes, "I got to just tell you something, Dave, you know. I've been watching you for a while, and I got to say something to you. You know, I don't mean to insult you by saying it, but my God, we never met anyone too dumb for this program, but we bury buttheads like you all the time. Guys just too smart for your own good. What's the matter, Dave? You don't take a little direction, a little encouragement, a little sponsorship from someone who maybe knows a little bit more about this deal than you do? Huh, Dave? What's the matter with you? We can't show you how to do this. By the way, guys, this shirt has cufflinks, and I didn't know it. That's why if I look like a clown, that's why, okay? I grabbed it quick this morning. I don't have cufflinks, and I look like a clown. Let's just get that out there right now. But I'm sweating. I was hoping I'd last the night. I'm not going to make it. So that's what that is. I didn't know it until I put it on. And the second thing I did is this. I came in here convinced drinking was my problem. Drinking was my problem. And why wouldn't I think drinking was my problem? And for the sake of this conversation, guys, I'm talking about the drink, the drug, and all the things like it. Because the drink and the drug were all the, right beside that drink on that table were all the drugs I could think of right there with it. But for the sake of this conversation, let's just call it the drink. I came in here convinced drinking was my problem. And why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I? Everyone in my life, everyone in my world is telling me drinking is my problem. I got my brothers and sisters, my mother, my father, the best friends in my life, everyone in my world, my coworkers, my bosses, my clients are telling me I got a drinking problem. You know what I mean? It's getting bad out there, you know? So I said to myself, okay, fine. If I got a drinking problem, then all I got to do then, if I just take the drink out of the equation, problem solved. Quit drinking. Stop drinking. My sponsor this time around said, Dave, you got a drinking problem? Quit drinking. And if after you quit drinking, you find you still have a problem, maybe the drink wasn't a problem to begin with, Dave. Maybe you're the problem. You got a drinking problem, guys? Quit drinking. Stop it. Stop it. Put it down. Ha, my father, put it down. Well, if you're the whole and the soul alcoholic, if you're the real alcoholic, if you're the whole variety alcoholic that the book talks about, and that is me, you take my drink away, you do not just solve the problem. As a matter of fact, when you take my drink away, that's when my problem just begins. You just created the problem. It's like, now what? Now what? For 30 years plus, I got a drink plastered to my hand. Now you take it away, I'm supposed to be okay? A drink that allows me to step out into a world that otherwise terrifies me, I can walk smooth, and you take it away, I'm supposed to be okay? That's not working for me. So how is it going to work? You know? And that's what happens. You see, I'm not a problem drinker, guys. I'm an answer drinker. Life was the problem. Drinking was the answer. It was my miracle. It was my relief. It set me free. It let me step out in the world that would otherwise terrify me, and I could walk smooth with a drink in my hand. And now you take it away, and I'm supposed to be okay? It doesn't work that way for me. Never has, it never will. You know, that bottle gave me relief. That drink was magic. You know, it set me free. You know, and I didn't cross some magical line somewhere along the way years into it. That's the way it happened to me from the first time out there. Can I take it back to 1973 for a minute? 13 years old, little patchy woods in Reading. I'm going to a junior high school dance. What a miraculous, life-changing event that one singular night back in October 1973. I just wanted to party. I just wanted to hang with my friends. We're going to drink for the first time. We all stole booze from our parents' liquor cabinets. We're going to meet in the woods. We did. I just wanted to fit in. Now, I had all the pains and all the problems any 13-year-old kid would have. I have the fears, doubts, and insecurities of any 13-year-old. Maybe I had a couple extra tossed my way. I was the goofiest-looking kid you ever saw. You know, the triple-lens glasses, the big nose, the buck teeth, 6'1" by the age of 7, you know what I mean? Every class had one, I was it, you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong, this is 25 years and $25,000 later, and I'm not done yet. Still more to do as far as I'm concerned. My uncle was goofing with me the other day. He said, "Uncle Paul, you got no right to goof on this face. I spent $25,000 on this face." He says, "What happened, Dave? You run out of money?" I said, "Oh, yeah." We a bastard. But give me 15 minutes in the woods that night in 73. Give me 15 minutes with my friends. Give me 15 minutes with that bottle to my lips. And I'm telling you guys, the magic happened. Now, I'm not saying the glasses fell off, the nose shrunk, the teeth didn't straighten. I didn't drop an inch or two. You know what happened? quite simply this. The fear went away. I wasn't afraid anymore. I wasn't afraid when I was drinking. The world that used to terrify me no more. I wasn't afraid of you guys. I liked you guys a lot better when I was drinking. I could hang with you a lot easier when I was drinking. I got along a lot better when I was drinking. You know what? Quite simply put, I liked myself better when I was drinking. And I couldn't find that ever, ever, ever in my 13 years up to that point in my life. And I made a decision that night. I didn't even know I was making. I made a decision that night. You know what I decided? I made a decision to make that drink the most important thing in my life. I made a decision to hold that drink, and I was going to hold on to it tight. I found something I never found anywhere else in the world, and I made a decision that night to make that drink the most important thing in my life, and to keep it the most important thing in my life, I'm going to pay a lot of prices. My seat in Alcoholics Anonymous did not come free. I paid for that seat. I paid for it lost with misery, frustration, heartache, confusion. I paid high price. We all pay high prices for our seats. I didn't come rolling in on the crest of a winning streak, neither did you. My seat came laced with pain, laced with loss, laced with misery. I was hurting. Pain's a great motivator, and I came in here with plenty of it. I heard a speaker in Boston put it one time, I'll say it the same way to you. You know, I was 21 years old, I walked into a liquor store in Boston. I walked to the back of the place, I grabbed a 12-pack of Budweiser, walked up front, plopped on the counter, looked at the guy behind the register, he looks back at me, he goes, that'll cost you $9.95, kid, in every real friendship you've ever had. Sounds about right. 31 years old, walk into a bar, like a shot and a beer, please. Bartender looks at you and says, oh, that'll cost you $8, mister, in your marriage. Me, I was 41 years old and I walked into Boston, downtown, Tremont Street. I walked into the package store and I said, I like that bottle of Jack Daniels, old number 7. Yes, please, I like that 5th. He puts it down in front of me and says, kid, that'll cost you $17.95 and your license to practice law in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I reached in my wallet, looked him square back in the eye, and I said, yep, sounds about right. I'll pay it. And I did. And so didn't you. You see, because what was in that bottle meant more to me than my career. What was in that bottle meant more to me than any relationship I've ever had, any material possession I've ever had. It meant more to me than the tears in my parents' eyes, my brothers, my sisters. You know, it ultimately meant more to me than my freedom. I've been behind bars. You know, the prices we're willing to pay. Anyway, so that's how it's going to go. I'll get through high school. I'll go to college, 4-year blackout. That's all that was. Eat, sleep, drink, and study. That's all I can remember. I graduate 4 years later with a degree in economics and cocaine addiction, and I move on to law school. You know what I mean? We'll go skip right on to the next phase, you know, of my development. And I do the 3 years of law school. I graduate from there, pass the bar. Now I'm working for that law firm. Now I'm 28, 29 years old, and here's where it starts falling apart. In the beginning, I'm staying a step or two ahead of the drink. By the age of 29, guys, I am no longer able to control my drinking. I am a man who has lost the ability to control his drinking. I am a man who lives in a body that cannot take a drink safely and doesn't know it. I'm a man who has lost the power of choice. The drink is now defining what I'm doing, where I'm doing it, who I'm doing with, and how long I'm going to do it for. I've lost all control. In the beginning, if drinking was something I was doing once in a while, sprinkled around my lifetime, by the age of 29, life was something I was doing, you know, once in a while, sprinkled around my drinking. I was out of control. I was living, one might say, to drink. And when I drink like that, I got to live like that. When I live like that, I got to drink like that. And that's just the way it goes. So age of 29, my bosses looked at me and they said, David, either you get out or you get sober. One of the two. You are a disgrace. You're reeking of booze, you're coming in late, you're missing court appointments, clients are complaining. You get sober, you get out. So I said, okay. Simply and solely to satisfy them, I went. I said, okay, I'll do it. And on July 5th, 1989, I jumped on a plane. I flew all places out here. Somewhere near here, maybe. I don't know, sure. Where's Ephrata? I came to Ephrata, Pennsylvania. Out to Lancaster County, out to the Amish farmlands. Looked a lot like this. You know? You know, I came out here. It was a beautiful old resort. It used to be a big resort. It was then turned into one of those 28-day rehabs. You know, if the only requirement for membership here is a desire to stop drinking, well, that's a wonderful thing. Except I didn't have one. I had three bosses who had a desire I stopped drinking. Maybe they should have gone. You know what I mean? I don't know what I was doing there, to be quite honest. You know, I looked at this place and go, "Oh God, I love it. This is like a resort." And it was. It was a built-in pool, tap wall, at three. Count me in. You know, I'm in. I started the 28-day vacation. And the thing is, God put a lot of God-inspired men and God-inspired women carrying a message of hope, a message of love, a message of recovery, a message of the 12 steps, a message of God. And I was hearing none of it. None of it. Why? Because you can't say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message. You can't say the right thing to me. You could have Dr. Bob to my left, Bill Wilson to my right, Lois pouring coffee, and I wouldn't have heard a thing. I wasn't ready. I didn't want it. But by the same token, guys, just as I can tell you, just like I mean, you can't say the right thing to someone who's not ready to hear our message. You cannot say the wrong thing to someone who is. When you're talking the language of the heart, and that's what this is, the language of the heart, it's not the language of the head. When the language of the heart kicks in, you know, when the God in you touches the God in me and the magic we call recovery happens, when one alcoholic reaches out to another alcoholic for the sole purpose of recovery, that's indescribable feeling, that magic, that electricity, that power. That power that happens when that happens, and you get that language of the heart kicking in, you're working with that man, you're working with that woman, you're talking to that group, and all of a sudden, how many times has this happened to you guys? When all of a sudden, something goes out of your mouth that you've never heard before. You never read it, you never saw it, you never heard it before, and you go, "Oh my God, that was good. I got to write that down. That was awesome." You know? And 10 minutes later, you can't even remember what you said. Why? Because they weren't your words to begin with. God pulled them out of your heart. If there was a language of the head, you'd remember them. And the language of the heart, you won't. So I had the language of the heart tossed at me left and right at this place by lots of God-inspired men and women. I was hearing none of it. My best memory from those 30 days at that place, arts and crafts. Like it was yesterday. I can still remember it. I'm in an auditorium like twice the size of this pavilion. I'm sitting at a huge table. 17 guys from up and down the East Coast are sitting there with me. I have a moment of clarity when I look up and I go, "Oh my God, you guys, what is wrong with this picture?" I'm a 29-year-old attorney from Boston sitting in the middle of Everett, Pennsylvania on a Wednesday morning at 10:30 doing spin art. Oh my God. Shoot me now. What happened? Hey, could you please pass the purple? You know what I mean? That's all I got. It's the best I got. That's all I remember. Anyway, it's 28 days later. I'm 15 pounds heavier. It's a nice artwork under my arm, and I'm back in Boston now, you know? Hanging my pictures. And talking about recovery, recovery. I'm in recovery. Like I know what it is. Like I have any clue what I'm doing. I was the guy your sponsors were saying, "Stay away from him. Just give him a little space. Just give him a little time." You know what I mean? I was stock raving sober. I had no idea what I was doing here. I wasn't asking for your help, your direction, your guidance, your sponsorship. I'm on my own. I'm a bumper car in this place. That's all I am. I'm talking doing bumper stickers. I'm out of my mind. It's like, "Hey, you want to go for coffee? Whoa, easy does it." You know, it's like, I was out of my mind. I look back at those 12 years, you know, not one person ever came to me for sponsorship. Not one, serious. No one asked me to be their sponsor that entire time. I know why now. No one wanted what I had. I didn't want what I had. I'm going to give it to you, you know what I mean? I'm telling you. So I'd stay sober a week, I'd stay sober a month, I'd stay sober a couple of months, or whatever. You know what I mean? I could never stay sober, nor did I want to. You know, I just hadn't hit that point where I wanted it. But I was trying. Best I had was 3 years. I stayed sober one time, 3 years. This time around, I'm about 2 weeks sober, November 2001. And here's a classic example, guys, of God using us with or without our permission. God does not need our permission to use any one of us. Willing or unwilling, conscious or unconscious, instruments of a power greater than ourselves. God could use us anytime He wants, with or without our permission. I'm at this place called the Miller House on Cape Cod. I'm 2 weeks sober this time around. When counselor's aide, my first day at this place, I'm out back having a smoke. He comes back out. His name was Joe. Classic example. If Joe was standing beside me right now, and Joe said, and I said, "Joe, remember that night we first met, the day I got to the Miller House, I was 2 weeks sober, and you said to me, da, 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 da." In all likelihood, guys, Joe would probably say, "You know, Dave, I don't remember that." Here I am, you guys, 10 years later, Still talking about it. You know what he said? He said this. He said, Dave, if all you're doing here is just looking to get sober, if all you're doing here is just want another day of sobriety, you think that's all we have to offer? And you think that's all we got here? And you're just here to fight the fight? You're just here to hang in there, Dave? You're just here to shake the monkey off your back? Huh? Is that all you're doing? Just shooting for midnight, Dave, one day at a time, fighting the fight, struggling through? And you think that's all this is about? And he says, you're taking no action whatsoever, Dave, to change the man you brought in here. You're doing nothing whatsoever, Dave, to change the person that you brought in here. He says, Dave, it's just a matter of time. Huh, Dave? Huh? How long can you hold your breath, Dave? It's just a matter of time. How long can you hold your breath before you're going to pick a drink back up again? Doing nothing to change the man, doing nothing to change the woman, doing nothing to change the person you brought in. It's just a matter of time. How long can you hold your breath? And he's exactly right. The best I got, 3 years. Back in the 90s, during those 12 years in and out, I held my breath for almost 3 years. It's the longest stretch I got going to date. It's the longest I could do. I was taking no action in this place whatsoever. I was coming to your meetings. I was fighting the fight. I was hanging in there. I was shooting for midnight, and that's all I was doing. I wasn't helping anyone nor asking anyone for their help. I was just showing up. And that might work for a lot of people. God bless you if it does, but it didn't work for me. You know? Doing nothing to change the man. At the end of those 3 years, what did I do? I picked up a drink. I made a sober decision to pick up a drink. Had to be a sober decision. Hadn't had one for 3 years, of course it was a sober decision. Anyone in this room who's relapsed after a week, a month, a year, or a decade, you did what I did after 3 years. You made a sober decision, too, to pick that drink back up. 3 years, after 3 years with a drink in my hand, holding that drink in my hand, drinking was not my problem. That drink was not my problem. That night I did not have a drinking problem, guys. How could I have had a drinking problem? I hadn't had one for 3 years. I couldn't have. I was solving the wrong problem. Well, my real problem that night was simply this, my sobriety, my ugly, miserable, untreated, I can't stand it for another second sobriety and my inability to live comfortably in it. I was solving the wrong problem. One of the leading causes of relapse? I'll tell you. It's sobriety. It really is. You can't stand your sobriety. You can't stand it anymore. I couldn't stand it either. And powerless? Hell yeah. I was only going out for the weekend. I'll be back Monday. Just give me one Saturday out there, one Saturday night. That's all I wanted. One more blackout. I'll be back. Monday I'll go back. And that weekend lasted 9 years. And during those 9 years, here's what I'll do. You see what I'll do? I'll start like this. I'll drink till I can stand that no more. Then I'll get sober till I can stand that no more. Then I'll drink till I can stand that no more. And before you know it, there goes another decade of my life. There goes another decade of my life. And left in my wake is a path of destruction a mile wide, because I'll blow like a tornado through the lives of everyone who loves me and wake up maybe yet again, if I'm lucky, in another nut house, wondering what happened. Looking at my life yet again burned to the ground and everything in it and all the things we lose in the fire and asking myself, how did this happen again? I'm tired of that. I'm tired of burning. I'm tired of rising from the ashes. I'm tired of waking up with nothing. I'm tired of watching my parents cry. I'm tired of being alone. You never have to be alone again. We promise you that. You know, I'm tired. And that's the way it would go. You know, this book gives me directions. It gives me clear-cut, simple directions. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. In the end, for me, it's November 2001. I'm a walking show of the man I used to be. I'm unemployed and unemployable again, thrown out of another law practice, another partnership, gone overnight, six-figure salary, gone overnight. The houses, the cars, the possessions are all there, long gone. Every real friend of the world, they're not with me anymore. They ran a long time ago. We step on the toes of our friends and they retaliate. Nope, mine just left. No retaliation necessary, Dave. We're just out of here, you know? I was all by myself. Tears in my parents' eyes on a nightly basis, put there by my actions that I'm powerless over stopping. My parents aren't alcoholic guys, but trust me, they suffered from alcoholism. Mine. My brothers and sisters, wonderful people all my life. At that point in my life, they were scared of me. You know? Every bit of potential, ambition, and drive I once had are long since gone. I can't even get out of bed unless there's a drink or a pipe waiting for me. honor and dignity lost in the dust of my addiction. My morals and values are warped beyond any sense of recognition. I don't even know who I am anymore. You know? My bottle's empty. My pipe is empty. My wallet's empty. My life is empty. And I don't know what to do. You know? And the only relief I get from this whole nightmare that I'm living is in a bottle. However short-lived that relief was, I still reached for it. I still went for it. I still raced for it. My last night out there was Wednesday, November 14, 2001. A night like any other for me. I cop an 8-ball, I smoke it. I bang back a fifth of tequila so I can forget about you and the rest of the world. And then I'm up in some dive bar up in Lowell, Massachusetts. And I close that bar like I've closed every bar I've ever been in. Lights are flashing. Dave, you gotta go. Dave, you gotta go. Hey, Dave, you gotta go. You know what I mean? My life story, you know? You know, glued to the bar stool, 2 a.m, gotta go, you know? And I didn't know it that night, you know? But as she told me to get up from that seat and said, Dave, you gotta go home. I took that drink, I kicked back that last sip, and I put that glass down that bar, not knowing that that would be my last drink to date. I had no idea that that would be my last drink to date. Trust me, guys, had I known that would have been my last drink, I would have ordered 2. You know, one for the road, you know what I mean? I had no idea. And I believe from that moment to this, I've been living a plan not my own. From that moment to this, the path that I've walked has not been one that's been planned by me. I didn't plan this path. I didn't chart this course. I did not design this destiny. Some power far, far, far greater than me stepped in and took control. I went home that night. I passed out, ready to get up the next day and just do it again. And that'll give you a pretty good idea of what I was like. Here's what happened. On the morning of November 15, 2001, I woke up to a knock on the door unlike any other knock I've ever heard in my entire life. And on the other side of the door stood the FBI, the DEA, 2 state and 2 local, looking for me. And the run was over. God plucked me right out of my old life. Next thing you know, I was one of 38 guys arrested that morning, you guys. From Miami to Boston, this federal sweep took place. I was one of 38. 17 of us were in Boston. I was one of them. Next thing you know, 17 guys, I'm one of them, standing in front of the United States Federal District Court, downtown Boston, Moakley Building, waterfront, nightmare, you know. The judge is looking down at us and telling us that the charges, conspiracy to possess and distribute 500 kilograms of cocaine. 500 kilograms. I buy 8 balls. It's kilograms. You got to be shitting me. He's like, can I see one? That's gotta be seriously. You know? I got 8 Colombians to my left, 8 Colombians to my right, there's Dave Perry in the middle. It's like, what happened, you know? And if you were standing next to me that morning, and you heard that judge telling us that these charges carry 10 to life, and if you heard that judge telling us that there was no bail for any one of us, you would have heard me say, this is the worst day of my life, Poppy. I would have. That's exactly what I would have said that day. But I'm here to report to you guys, almost 10 years to the day later, I don't quite look at it that anymore. As a matter of fact, I'm here to report. I look at that event as probably the single greatest event that's ever happened in my life. You want to know why? Because I believe that God sent those men. He sent them for me. He had a plan with my name on it. He was just waiting too long. I wasn't getting out of the way to let it take place. I kept getting in the way. So God had to take the matter in his own hands. And he sent the FBI. He sent the FBI. And I'll tell you when the worst day of my life was. 2 days later, Saturday, November 17, 2001. 50 years to the day my mom and dad were married, and 50 years to the day we were celebrating their wedding anniversary back in Reading. Me, I'm in Plymouth County Correctional Facility down in Plymouth, Massachusetts. I'm in a room about 20 times the size of this pavilion. I'm sitting on one of 80 bunk beds spread across the place. It's new man, the place they put you before they put you in your individual cells. And I'm sitting on my bunk. And I'm staring at the wall, and for myself, 20 feet away on the wall in front of me, I'm staring at the payphone. And you guys, I'm realizing for the first time in my life, even if I wanted to get up, walk across that room, and pick up that payphone, I had no one left to call. No one. I've never been more alone in my life than I was at that very moment and realized it. And that's my bottom. I found it. I found it. I pray it never dips any deeper, drops any lower, or slides any further. I found it. I found mine. Have you guys found that place in your life where you've got no place left to go but to God? Are you there yet? Have you guys realized that there's no human power on earth that's going to relieve us of our alcoholism? Do you guys understand what our real job here is? Really quite simply this. Our job is to find a power by which we can live, and it has to be a power greater than ourselves. That's really all this is about. Let us hook you up with that power. Let us help you find that power. That's all we're doing here. You know? Anyway, a couple days later, but for the grace of God and the compassion of the federal government, I'm pulled out of that jail cell. I'm put in the Federal Pretrial Services Division. The judge told me that they were going to give me a chance to find my recovery if I wanted it. Needing it meant absolutely nothing. And the next thing you know, I'm sent down to Cape Cod. I'm put into one of those detoxes for 10 days to a place called the Miller House for another, to a place called the Miller House for another 4.5 months. And from there I went on to a halfway house, and then I went on to a sober house. And for the first... I'm just trying to see the time on it. For the first 8 months of my sobriety, thanks very much. For the first 8 months of my sobriety, you know, I'm sober for one reason, one thing, reason only, fear. Fear sobered me for a bit. But that's not the solution here. You know? If I picked up the drink, the federal marshal picking me up and I'm going back to jail, period. Just that simple. You know? But God had another plan, because on July 21st, 2002, another miracle in my life happened when my sponsor came into my life. An old friend of mine was moved down to Baltimore when I was 1997. 5 years later, he heard about my arrest and the fact that I was in treatment, called up and asked me if I wanted to go up to, he had a place up in Laconia. His sister had a cottage. He was going up for 3 days for vacation. He asked me if I wanted to go. Just an old friend. 3 day vacation. That's all I thought it was. I didn't know God was sending me my sponsor. He got off the plane that morning, guys. He looked me square in the eyes. He looked different. He sounded different. He was fresh-skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. The exact same experience Bill Wilson described at the end of that bleak November 1934 was the exact same experience I had on July 21st, 2002, when this guy got in my car. We start driving up 93, heading up to New Hampshire. He started giving me within 15 minutes, sharing his, telling me in a general way what his life was like, what happened to him, what he's like now. And he started giving me the greatest gift that one alcoholic could give out to another, hope. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could have what he had. Hope that maybe, just maybe, I could get set free too. Hope that maybe, just maybe, the pain that I was still suffering from in sobriety could finally end. Hope that maybe, just maybe, maybe, just maybe, I could find a little of that new freedom and that new happiness that you people were telling me about for all those years. I'm not here to patch up my old life and live sober in it, guys. I'm getting a brand new one. We're getting brand new lives, brand new freedoms, brand new happiness. Our lives get recreated. The third step says we get reborn. And that's what happened that morning. I said, Steve, I've been around these steps. I've been around these meetings. I've seen these steps on the wall. I've got to be honest. I don't understand how they work. I don't agree they want to work. I didn't believe they're going to work. I said, how do you do these steps you don't understand them? How do you do these steps you don't agree with them? How do you do these steps you don't even believe they're going to work for you? He says, that's just it, David. You don't have to understand them. You don't have to agree with them. And you don't have to believe in them to make them work. I said, well, how do you make them work then? He goes, the greatest promise in that book is on page 58, guys. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. He said, can you walk behind me down a path? Can you stay right behind me down a path? You don't have to say what I say. You don't have to think what I think. But if you do what I do, you're going to get what I got. Because this is a program of action. It's a program of action. Your recovery's not in your head. It's in your feet. How long are you going to come to a 12-step program, Dave, and ignore the 12 steps? In my case, 12 years, but that's just a coincidence. You know what I mean? I said, so when do I start? He goes, when do you want to recover? When do you want to get set free? When do you want the pain to end? I said, now. He says, let's go. If you decide you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, you're ready. You're ready. You're ready now. No one says you have to wait. Don't buy into the bull. No one, nowhere, nowhere in this literature or our history does it say you have to wait. And I jumped right in with that guy. And don't let him tell you any different. It's right in that book. Immediate action will get you immediate results. By 3 that afternoon, I'm taking a third step. By 3 that afternoon, I'm getting out of my car. I'm offering myself to God. I'm becoming an agent of God. That's all we are, secret agents of God. That's all we are, carrying His message. I took on a new employer. 5 words that changed my life. We took on a new employer. I got a new boss. I got a new job, and I got new job duties. I'm here at your invitation tonight. Thank you very much for having me, but to be quite honest, God sent me. I'm working for Him tonight. I'm doing His work. I got back in the car that night and said, my God, Steve, that was awesome. My God, I feel great. Let's grab some dinner. He goes, no, let's grab a notebook. He brings me to a country store, sends me in to buy a notebook and a pen, and I start writing a 4-step right there and then. 3 hours later, I was done. I was searching. I was fearless. I was thorough. I wrote about my resentments. I wrote about my fears. I put my sex conduct on paper, and then I read it to him. 2 days later, we were finished. Except now, 3 days later, we're back at Logan. He's flying back to Baltimore. I go, well, wait a minute. How are you going to sponsor me from Boston to Baltimore? How are you going to do that? Don't you only have to pick me up, lend me money, buy me cigarettes, give me rides? How are you going to do that from Boston to Baltimore? I'm getting gypped, you know? He said, how about this, Dave? Let's just trust 2 words. Let's just trust God. I went through the rest of these steps over the phone. Now, a lot of guys will say you can't do it that way. Well, color me wrong, but color me recovered, guys. A man armed with the facts about himself and experience with these 12 steps showed me how to do this. I dotted every I, I crossed every T, and within 3 weeks, that's all it took, I started feeling it. I started getting that spiritual awakening. It's the result, not something that might happen if you're lucky. It's what will happen. The spirit that was so dead when I got here slowly started to come alive and awake, not by what I said, not by what I read, not by what I heard, not by what I studied, but really by what I did. I started carrying this message. You know, when he reminded me, every day is a day, every day is a day we have to carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. I don't stay clean on yesterday's shower. I don't stay fit on yesterday's meal. I don't stay physically fit on yesterday's workout at the gym. And I'm not going to stay spiritually fit on yesterday's action. If I want it today, I got to do it today, and it's just that simple. And you want to know the greatest miracle that's happened to me as a result of this whole thing? The greatest miracle that happened somewhere right at the very beginning. I can't tell you when. I don't know when. What day did I wake up? And I found the most powerfully destructive force in my life. The most powerfully destructive force in my life has been removed. It's gone. My obsession to drink and drug has been lifted. It doesn't exist. I'm not here fighting the fight. I'm not here hanging in there. I'm not here with the monkey on my back. I'm not shooting for midnight. I've been set free. I've been set free. And I can't tell you what morning it happened. I don't know when it happened. One day I woke up and it was gone. Why can't I tell you when it happened? Why don't I know what day that took place? Why, when? The reason I don't know is simply this, guys. I had nothing to do with it. God took it. My sponsor said, you say about God's business, He'll take care of yours. And one day when I wasn't looking, He snatched it right up. And it's been gone ever since. I'm coming up 9:02. I'm going to end now. I'm not going to go over on you guys. I'll tell you what happened, though. 3 weeks into it, my sponsor's got me on the phone. I'm taking direction. He's in Baltimore. I'm in Boston. Okay? He's got, what are you doing tonight? I go, Steve, I'm going to go to a meeting. Where are you going to go? I go, I'm going downtown. I'm going to go to Crossroads tonight. He goes, okay, you want a little direction? I go, shoot, what do you want me to do? He goes, tonight, Dave, I want you to do a little something different. Tonight, when you walk into that meeting, I want you to do a little something different. Tonight, when you walk into that meeting, instead of you walking into that meeting looking to see what you can take, because God knows you've been taking all your life, why don't you walk in there looking to see what you can bring? How about that, Dave? Why don't you walk in there looking to see what you can bring? He goes, I want you to find that new guy in the corner all by himself and let him know he never has to be alone again. Look at that new girl over there in the corner shaking away and let her know she never has to feel that way again. He goes, I want you to start talking about these steps. I want you to start talking about your recovery. I want you to start talking about the actions you've been taking. I want you to start sharing your experience. I want you to go find someone to sponsor, and I want you to find them tonight. I go, you got to be kidding me. I'm 3 weeks into this. 3 weeks into this with you. I can't say it like you say it. I don't know it like you know. You've been down there in Baltimore sponsoring hundreds of thousands for years already. I can't do it like you do it. I don't know it like you know it. I'm not ready for that. I'm not qualified. He says, David, I know you're not qualified, and you know you're not qualified. But that new guy in the corner's got no clue you're not qualified. Now get over there and help him. Huh? And the guy's right. He's got no clue. I've got no clue. I got my hand out. You got one day, show that guy with no days how you got one. You got 7 days, show that guy with two how you got seven. I'm not saying don't take him through the steps if you haven't been. Wait on that. But my God, can you help now? Huh? And besides, guys, God doesn't look for qualified men and women. None of us are. I'm more qualified than anyone standing in this room tonight to carry this message. God doesn't look for qualified men and women. He looks for the willing. Are you willing? Are you willing? What, you got the busies? You got the busies? Huh? My sponsor said, what's got you so damn busy, Dave? You're chasing the money, the property, the prestige. You had those before. They fill the hole. Besides, Dave, I saw when you got out of the nut house. You didn't look too busy to me, you know? And he's right. So my message is real simple. We have a miracle available for you guys. For those of you who haven't experienced yet, we get a wholesale, unmerited gift called recovery. We get it available to anyone and everyone in this room. The miracle happened 76 years ago, June 10th, 1935, when two strangers found their way to a kitchen table in Akron, Ohio. One alcoholic reached out to another alcoholic for the sole purpose of recovery. And they started a conversation that day that's going on this very minute, this very night, at tables and meetings and houses across the world. The same conversation is taking place at this very moment. And the only decision that you need to make in your life today, especially if you're suffering in sobriety, especially if you're sentenced to sobriety, especially if you can't stand that for another second sobriety, that untreated alcoholism that you're suffering from sober, we have a way out. We have a way out that works. Please let us show you. My prayer is just let us show you. And be careful, guys. A lot of us can sound real good for these podiums. Or we can talk a great game. No doubt, watch our lips. But more importantly, watch our feet. Watch the man and watch the woman whose feet are moving in sync with their lips. And what you're probably looking at is a man or a woman who's relying on a power far, far, far greater than themselves to do it. And maybe, just maybe, that's the person you might want to follow. If you haven't experienced this thing I call recovery, this wholesale miracle, if you haven't experienced that, come with us, guys. Just come with us. Let us show you. I guarantee you'll get set free. I guarantee the obsession will be lifted. And I guarantee your life will forever change. And I guarantee you will get blown away. God bless you guys. Thanks for having me.